Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. Oh my gosh, it's Leaf Day! Yay! For February 29th, 2012, episode 348, sponsored by Equestrian Collections and FeedXL. Good morning, Horse World!
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and
well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Jamie. Let me tell you what should not happen at the end of February in Lexington, Kentucky, is you should not wake up to bad thunderstorms and the weather alarm going off with tornado watches. That shouldn't happen at the end of February in Kentucky or anywhere.
No, aren't you supposed to be just getting wet snow right now? Not tornadoes.
Exactly. No, it was 65 degrees yesterday, and then this front's coming through. By the way, we're supposed to have another line of really wicked storms here in the next half hour. So if we go off the air, you're talking to yourself, buddy.
Ooh, it's all about me, my show. So if that happens, if Glenn disappears and Jennifer disappears, those of you listening, just give us a call, 347-637-3238, and I'm going to take surveys on what you do and don't like about Glenn and Jennifer. No.
Oh, there you go. Well, hopefully that won't happen and everything will be just fine. That's what we hope. Hey, it's Leap Day. You know what my theory about Leap Day is? Because this is kind of a day that doesn't exist, you can do anything you want today and it doesn't matter.
I like that. What a good idea. Now,
you can eat what you want. You can break all the laws you want because they can't arrest you because this day didn't really exist.
You know what this day is? This is an extra special day given to us once a year where you don't have to pay your mortgage for one extra day or your board bill. You know, it's like, I'm like, oh, but now that I'm boarding horses, this extra day is a day that I'm not getting paid on the first of the month by all my boarders. So this is an extra special day. And, you know, I feel bad for some people. And I would love to hear somebody on Facebook post about, is it your birthday today? Because if it is, how old are you? I mean, are you 4? Are you 8? You know what I mean? How old are you? Because if your birthday is on Leap Day, do you not, like, celebrate it till your birthday is around?
Well, you can have a heck of a party every 4 years.
That's true. That would be a good idea.
Because everyone then is important. Like, we have them every year, and it's kind of like it's your birthday. But, you know, everyone's important when you only have one every 4 years.
I know. So maybe a good question on Facebook, question of the beginning of the show. It doesn't have to be the question of the day. But do you know anybody, or is it your birthday today? And if so, how do you celebrate that? Are you 4 years old today, or what? You know? I mean, I would love to say that at the age of 30-something, I'm only, you know, maybe like 12 years old or 10 years old, maybe 8 years old.
Well, I was going to say, there is the mental side and then the physical side, Jamie. As long as we all act like we're only 12 to 16 years old, I think we're fine.
And that's a good point. That's a good point. So, Jennifer, what is on today's show?
On today's
Hit'em morning flight across the interweb. Immediately after beverage service is complete, our flight crew will be presenting an interesting chat with head honcho of the Derby Fence Company, Tom Spears. And barring any weather-related turbulence, our flight edutainment for the day will be Navicular Disease 101, provided by thehorse.com's weekly horse health report. And it's Crappy List Wednesday, folks. So stay tuned for the hilarious countdown to cabin pressurization.
That's pretty good, Jennifer. Jeez. Every day she comes up with this stuff. I don't know where she comes up with it. Well, my daily winnie goes out to Lisa Bike, who yesterday helped us out Bic. And posted the – is it Bic or Bike?
Bic. Every time.
Bic. Every time. See, I can remember. It's leap day. It doesn't matter. I can call her Bike today. It doesn't matter whatever we do today. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's a gift. So, Lisa, sorry about that. She was kind enough to look up and post the schedule for Appassionata, which we talked about the show that's going to be traveling the country from Europe. And I actually did talk to the people from the Kentucky Convention Center yesterday. They gave me a call, and we're going to get the Appassionata people on the beginning of April to learn more about that show. But she posted a link. If you go to Horses in the Morning Facebook page, you'll find it there, and it has some of the places that they're going to be touring at least over the next couple of months, and the rest should be posted there shortly. They're looking at 60 cities. I think there's about 10 posted so far. So that's the scoop on that.
Well, yesterday I had an incredibly tough day. As those, maybe if you weren't listening yesterday, I lost one of my horses. I had to put down my horse, Will. He was about, they said between 28 and 30, so pretty close to 30 if you ask me. And he had foundered and he was just having some problems. So we had to put him down yesterday. And, I posted a photo, as is with Facebook. For some reason, we all like to get condolences on Facebook. And I posted a picture of Will and just, and kind of memorial said how much we're going to miss him and honor him and everything. And I got to tell you that it was so nice yesterday because my phone is set up to Facebook is in my phone. And I get a little beep every time somebody comments on something that I commented about or I posted. And I got to tell you, it was so nice yesterday that throughout the day, it was such a hard day, and I cried probably 10 different times yesterday, and it was just really rough. But having this little phone in my pocket that would beep, and I would look at it, and it was somebody offering some kind words. You did it, Glenn, and so many of our listeners I'm appreciative for. I even got comments from people from high school that I went to high school with, and my mom, just everybody that I know commented on, how they understand and their heart is heavy and just nice stuff. So just to let everybody know, that stuff really does mean a lot. And I just wanted to thank everybody and give everybody my daily winnie who kind of, I felt like they were with me yesterday. And it was a tough day and we got through it and I feel like I did the right thing and it was nice to have all of you with me. So just thank you very much for that.
It's easy to understand when you're a horse person because all of us that have been horse people for any period of time have gone through this, Jennifer and I, numerous times. And I'd like to say it gets easier every time you have to go through it, but that's not a true statement. It really doesn't. But you do get through it, and you did the right thing for the horse's benefit, and the horse is out of pain at this point. So.
Yeah.
So
okay.
you did good. Podcast, I want to mention a couple things, housekeeping things here before we get on with the show. One is there's a new cool app that I don't think we talked about here before that for your iPhone, if you have an iPhone, for listening to podcasts, including our shows here at the Horse Radio Network, and it's called the Podcaster app. And if you just go to the App Store on your iPhone and search Podcaster, Podcaster, you'll find it's $1.99, but it does a pretty good job of keeping it automatically downloads new episodes of shows, makes it very easy to listen to the shows, and it downloads the shows in the background. So when it pings the server and when it finds that there's a new one, it'll automatically download it. It's a very good little app. I was very impressed with it, and it's cheap. It's $1.99. I think it's worth taking a look at if you like our shows or you like other podcasts, and that's one I highly recommend. For the iPhone, I did not find it yet for the Droid phone. As far as really bad ads, Jennifer says we don't have enough. This week's prize for really bad ads is Dr. Rose's Remedies. It's Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment Solvent Spray, our 100% all-natural product. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. They're pretty much anti-everything. They're probably anti-mother-in-law. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients, and they can be used for most skin conditions from hot spots in dogs to rain rot and wounds in horses. So if you have a problem with your horse that involves a cut, if you have a problem with your mother-in-law because she comes over too often, you need Dr. Rose's Remedies. I, by the way, I added the mother-in-law part.
Where can we get that?
Just take a look. Just search for Dr. Rose's on Google, and you'll find Dr. Rose's Remedies. And that's what we'll be giving away this week, a gift pack from them. Get your really bad ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com and put really bad ads in the subject line. We need them, so get looking on Craigslist. Hop to it. Chop, chop. It's fun to look there anyway. And who knows, if you're like Jamie, you'll come home with three horses this week.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of in the market for another lesson horse, and I've been looking on Craigslist, and I know we should discuss this on Friday, but it frustrates me to no end. Okay, an ad yesterday, kids pony, $200, must sell because of, you know, whatever extenuating circumstance that they are finding themselves in. This time I think it was illness. Must sell kids pony, needs training. excuse me. How is it a kids pony? It's not a kids pony. It's just a pony. It's a kids pony if it has training. Am I wrong here?
You're right. Well, you know, it should say potential kids pony.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, this is an ad. Wait, $200. Oh, that's because it's wild as a deer, and you probably can't even catch it in the field. so, yeah, there you go. Kid's pony with, like, 10, 15 years of training underneath its belt, it will make a good kid's pony. But it wouldn't be $200.
That's right. It'd be $300. So it was a good kid's pony.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so get your ads in. Jennifer needs them. We need them for Friday. So we'll be doing that on Friday. Got to get your ads in today, though. We also have a big announcement we're going to make on Friday. At least it's big for some of us here at the Horse Radio Network. And we're going to let you know all about that on Friday. So look forward to Friday's program. Well, did you have any news you wanted to go before I got into? I kept the crappy list. I got two crappy lists for you today, and I kept them pretty light. Yesterday was kind of a, you know, one of those serious heavy shows, so I kept them pretty light today. Did you have any news you wanted to do before?
Yes. Let me let you know. Remember last Friday when we were talking about Derby hopefuls and Derby potentials?
Yep.
And we were going to wait until after the Fountain View Stakes to kind of see who was going to emerge from that before we chose our Derby horse. But you were kind of leaning towards the horse Algorithms because they're from Louisville. It's a nice couple that owns this horse. Great story. Well, my friend, sadly, Algorithms is not going to be making it to any of the Triple Crown races. So
why?
We'll have to keep looking. Well, remember, he was actually injured right before the race. They didn't even run him in the Fountain View Stakes because he unfortunately fractured a splint bone in his right front leg, according to a press release that came out yesterday. Now, this horse is by Bernardini. He's not going to have a bad life. They actually think he's going to race again. But Todd Pletcher, the trainer, says, we're hoping he only requires a minimal amount of time off, but he is definitely not going to make any of the Triple Crown races. So he will go to race again, but unfortunately going to be late summer or early fall, says the owner. So, sorry, Algorithms is not going to be our Derby pick of the year, so you're just going to have to keep on looking.
I thought we had accomplished something last week. I feel bad for the horse, too. Is it surgery? Are they going to do surgery?
Yeah, they're going to do surgery. Yeah. And actually, you know, if they do fracture a splint bone, Jet, my horse, he broke his splint bone probably not too long after I got him. And, you know, they were like, okay, it's like a $1,500 surgery for them to just remove that extra bone because they don't need the splint bone. Now, I was fortunate enough to, when I sent the x-rays to the surgeon, mind you, this is my $400 horse that I adopted, right? And then he needs a $1,500 surgery, blah, blah, blah. Well, the surgeon said to me, listen, there's potential that this sucker will just heal and you'll be okay. Now, if we take it out, he's going to be off the same amount of times. Is he in training? And I was like, no, he's basically eating right now.
Amy, I'm going to interrupt you there because I have to turn off our weather alarms that are going off again. So talk amongst yourselves.
So, Jennifer.
I want to hear. What'd you do?
The surgeon, believe it or not, said to me, why don't you just wait? It's either going to heal or we can remove it at any time. So it's not something that is a really big deal, apparently. I ended up, first of all, I've never had a surgeon tell me to wait on surgery. Usually they're like,
that's not usually what you hear.
No, usually they're like, why? They're rubbing their hands together like, ha, 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 surgery. You need surgery. But this surgeon was like, let's just wait. And you know what? It healed fine, and we haven't knocked on wood. Had another problem with it. Now, of course, a horse like Algorithms, who is, you know, a big-time fancy racehorse, they don't want to wait. And they don't want to kind of wait and see whether it's going to heal or not. So they're going straight in. They've got the surgeon who's like, yes, bring him in. Let's cut his leg open and take it out. No, so they're, because they can afford it, they're going to do it.
Yeah. Now, did your horse end up with a big chunky golf ball lump where his was, or did it heal nice and pretty?
You know, it was on the outside of his cannon bone.
Really?
And yeah,
hey, it's pretty unusual to have an outside cannon bone fracture. Wow.
Yeah, that's what happens when the ridiculously irresponsible barn owner put him out with a couple mares.
Oh,
to
I got
teach
it.
Him a lesson.
Got
he
it.
Was, she was going to teach him a lesson, unbeknownst to me, and they kicked him. So that's how his bone actually broke. God, I'm glad my horses are at my house now. So much better.
I'm back.
Sorry.
Excuse me.
Back on track here. He healed up fine. The only the blip that he has is literally maybe the tip of my pinky. We got really, really, really lucky. Yeah. Of course, I kept him in like a cast for 6 weeks. You know, I like bandaging him, and you know, I had a bandage on him from the top of his knee down to past his hoof. You know, and of course the vet was like, "That's not really completely necessary," and I'm like, "Yes, it is." Shut up. I got to wrap him. I'm like, if I could have put bubble wrap around him, I would have, you know. So we ended up apparently putting a tight bandage around it, stabilized the bone until it started to grow together. So yay me.
Well, there you go. Good job, Jamie.
But again, Algorithms, they can afford the surgery, so they're just going to do it.
Might as well. When you're the owner of Algorithms, you can do that. Well,
exactly.
We are, actually, the alarms just went off again. Severe thunderstorm warnings heading, storms heading our way. But let's get to crappy list. I have a fun one here for you that we take a look at every year, and I need you to guess this one, Jamie. So are you ready for a little guessing game?
Yeah, sure.
All right. These are the top 10 dog breeds in 2011 by popularity as put out by the American Kennel Club. So these are the top 10 most popular dog breeds for 2011. So do you have any guesses?
I'm going to go ahead and rule out the dogs that my husband bought because I don't think English Shepherds made the list. Am I correct?
That you are correct.
Okay, then I'm going to have to go with the Labrador.
Labrador number one, again for like the 50th time in a row.
That's because they always get loose and breed with each other.
They're a great family dog, Labrador.
Yeah. Next would be Golden Retriever.
Actually, the Golden Retriever is number four on the list.
Okay,
so
number
four.
Good
so far.
The next most popular dog breed would have to be the Jack Russell Terrier.
Not on the list because I don't think they must have asked any horse owners. You know, if we made a horse owner list, we'll talk about that. Let's do this list first, and then we'll kind of make up our top 10 list for horse owners, you know, what they own.
Okay, well, then that begs the question, is the corgi on the list?
The corgi is not on the list. You're going to be surprised at a couple of these that are on the list, actually. I think you're going to be surprised.
All right, well, then I'll guess a random one. Would the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel be on the list?
I don't think it's in the top 100, Jamie.
Oh. Well, they had those dogs on Sex and the City, and I thought they got popular after that. How about the Karen Terrier?
Ooh.
Okay, you need to be thinking a little more. How about I give you a hint? We'll start at number 10, and I'll give you a hint on this one. Think hot dog.
Dachshund.
Dachshund actually, for the first time, went to number 10 on the list. Broke the top 10. Number 9 is the boxer. Of which, is that what Wendy just adopted, Jennifer? Was
yes.
that a boxer?
Yes, she just adopted a sort of one-and-a-half-eyed boxer.
A one-and-a-half-eyed, 14-year-old, half-crippled boxer. That's right.
Ooh, what a find.
She has already done acupuncture about 12 times. I said, great, this one-and-a-half, you know, this dog that can only see about 30% has one eye, and it's sticking out of its head, and it's 14 years old, comes into your house, and you start poking it with needles. He's going to love you.
Is the Border Collie on the list?
Nope.
Golly, forget it. Just go ahead and tell me.
Number 8, Poodle. It kind of surprised me. That
I guess Poodle.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, see, they have a statistical advantage because there's 4 sizes to choose from.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, this must be all poodles, not just mini poodles. I like the big poodles, not so much the little poodles.
Big poodles.
But the big poodles are cool. Number 7, the bulldog. I was kind of surprised. Number 6, I was really shocked at. It's the first time it's broken top 10, and actually it kicked the Shih Tzu out of the top 10, and that was the Rottweiler.
Kick
really?
The Shih Tzu sounds like a rap song.
Kick the Shih Tzu.
I think you need to rinse. I think you need to rinse your mouth out with soap.
Sorry, I'm going to put myself on mute.
So the Rottweiler was number 6. I was kind of surprised to see that in there. Number 5, the Yorkshire Terrier.
Oh yeah, my mom has one of those.
Yeah, are they yippy dogs?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what? I got to take that back. My mom's just a yippy dog. I can't speak for other Yorkies, but my mom, I'm like, just kick it. Just kick it.
My mom had a schnauzer, same way. Barked endlessly. Oh, it was awful.
I'm like, why is it barking? I'm on the phone with you. It's not like I'm ringing the doorbell.
I know. It used to do the same thing, or their schnauzer used to do the same thing. Number 4 is the Golden Retriever, which I thought you would have, you did guess that one, right?
I did.
Number 3, the Beagle.
I guess that one.
Yeah, number 3, and there the Beagle. Jennifer loves Beagles. That's one of Jennifer's favorites. Someday we'll have to own a Beagle.
Okay.
Number 2 totally shocked me, and that's the German Shepherd. I didn't know there were that many German Shepherds out there.
Okay. I can see that.
And number 1, you guessed it, was the Labrador. So that's the top 10. Now let's do the horse owners list. Do you think the Corgi is number 1 now, or is it still the Jack Russell? What do you think?
I think it depends on what horse show you go to. Because it seems to me like, obviously, if you go to like the Hunter Jumper shows, there's a lot of the corgis. If you go to more, I don't know, the more jumpers or Western riders, don't they have a lot of the Jack Russells? And then I feel like when I go to events, everybody's a mutt. Like it doesn't seem to be like one specific breed, and, you know, mutts are just kind of everywhere. Jennifer, do you have an opinion on the dogs? I mean, I think I see a lot of Border Collies, a lot of corgis and Jack Russells and mutts.
Yeah. Yeah, mutts. And I would agree with you. When you go to, and you're at the shows at the indoor circuit in particular, you tend to see a list that a little bit closer matches the AKC. But, yeah, an event, herding dogs that do not need heat in their bedroom, dogs that do well with horse poop. Those are the dogs you see at events. What do you see at carriage shows, Glenn?
Oh, they got Jack Russells. They have corgis too. I think probably at carriage shows you see less of the Heinz 57 mutts, and you see more of the purebreds. And the other thing we saw a lot of at the one carriage show, Jennifer, was the tall, very statuesque, regal-looking dogs. I can't remember the name of them now.
The sighthounds, the big.
There's a lot of different kind of sighthounds. Not so much greyhounds, but sighthounds. What are they called?
Afghans
and those kinds.
Yeah.
We've seen those at carriage events too. But they tend to go for smaller dogs that fit in your lap. You know, kids.
Well,
the
they have to.
The
they have to sit in your lap and go for the ride. You know.
Yeah, that's right. That's correct. So that's the list of top 10. Hey, now I got a fun little list we can go through very quickly here. We all love movies. We talk about movies a lot here on the morning show. And, you know, we were just whining the other day that War Horse didn't win anything at the Oscars. Well, I have the 13 things that movie theater employees won't tell you about going to the movies. And this was put together by a bunch of movie theater workers from across the country. So these are the top 13 things they won't tell you. Number one is popcorn keeps for a day or two, so many customers confuse warm with fresh. And the first moviegoers of the day get day-old popcorn.
Really?
Yeah, they don't empty that out because it keeps. So they think it keeps, so they're saving money. So they're just going to get, you know, they're saving their 25 cents for popping another batch of $12 popcorn. So if you're there to see the matinee first thing in the day, you may not be getting popcorn, fresh popcorn. Number 12, yes, the movie starts late. Get used to it. But they almost always end on time, otherwise the ushers wouldn't know when to clean up. Theaters tell you to come in early, so they force you to watch the commercials and the previews. And that is so true, and I think that's gotten worse, hasn't it?
Gosh, yes, you have commercials now. They're not just previews, they're commercials.
I know.
See, there was a day you didn't...
Well, if you look back at movies where, you know, people watching movies in old movies, and they're watching it, and, like, there's news that comes on, a newsreel, and there's, like, not even really previews, just kind of general lifestyle stuff. And now we're, like, watching about a lawyer who, you know, if you've been injured in a car accident, give this number a call. It's ridiculous.
I know. And it used to be the shorts. They used to do more of the shorts, the little tiny movies, the 4-minute movies that they did before the movie. And they used to do more of those. And now Pixar is the only one that does them, I think.
That's true. That is true.
Okay.
And they're probably the most expensive. So let me guess some of these, because your crappy list, things they won't tell you in the movie theater is that they never, ever disinfect anything.
They didn't say it quite that way, but Number 11 is, yes, sometimes we sweep excess food under the seats. Movies often end every few minutes, and we just don't have time to clean up, so we'll just sweep the garbage under the seat.
Gross. They just need a blower.
I know.
Stand at the top, turn the blower on, and blow it all down to the bottom and sweep it up. God, I'm brilliant.
You got any more guesses, Jennifer?
Something about the cost per ratio of how much popcorn is. Like, popcorn literally probably costs them like 10 cents and they charge $12. Same deal with the sodas, Cokes and stuff. I bet that they make probably 1,000% on those.
That's pretty much what they do say. And in the article here, they said that they make no money at all on the movie. When a first run movie comes out, it all goes back to the movie company. So they make nothing. So they have to make their money on this stuff. They'd say, you can't get extra cups. Don't ask for an extra cup. We're not going to give you one because everything's inventoried at the end of the night, even the cups. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Stop getting angry that your food isn't ready. Microwaves can't cook frozen pizzas in 30 seconds. I can honestly say that the only thing I've ever gotten at a movie theater is the popcorn and the boxed candy. I have never gotten anything of the extra stuff. And they say in here, one of the ones is, the only foods that we trust to eat, now this is the employees at the theater, the only foods that we trust to eat are popcorn, drinks, and boxed candy. Mm-hmm. We would not eat any of the pretzels, hot dogs, or nachos.
Wait,
Wait, they'll only eat the what? The
popcorn, drinks, and box candies. They wouldn't. Their own employees don't eat the pretzels, hot dogs, or nachos. They don't recommend that.
Huh. Gross. Okay. So all the years of sneaking my own food into the movie theater is probably the best way.
It's probably the best way. And, you know, that's why I always wear baggy coats, because we bring in water. And, you know, even water there is like $3 or $4. Let me see what other ones are good here. We're running out of time. Oh, why does it smell so good in the movie theater? Because the popcorn has chemicals in it that makes the aroma fill the theater. They actually add smell good stuff to the popcorn so it smells better. And let me see what else here. I know all the methods you use to sneak in to see a movie. I just don't care enough to kick you out for it.
They know.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever watched one movie and then snuck into another one? Have you ever done that?
I can't sit still that long, so no. Have you?
I think when I was a teenager, yes. I have to admit that we probably did that once or twice. Jennifer and I have actually gone into one movie, and it sucked so bad that we would leave and go watch another movie. Because we figured we had the right, that this one was awful, so we didn't have to sit there and watch it. We at least deserved to see a movie. That was our theory.
Now, I understand that and appreciate that theory. However, if your movie sucks, and I have done this many times because, again, I have a hard time sitting still that long, so it better be good. And if it sucks, I will go out, find the manager, and tell them I don't want to see that movie. Get a refund for that movie and then buy a ticket for another one. Because if the movie is that crappy, I don't want them getting my money.
You put a lot of effort into that.
You know how big a deal it is? The, like, 10 years I was doing, every Monday morning I would have to do a count of, like, what movies were top in the box office for this past weekend. And I would never want the crappy movie to be in the top box office count. Sorry, just me.
Well, that's it. That's my crappy list for the day. We have to move on here. We have a guest coming up in just a minute. But first, we have our Equestrian Collections Product of the Week. Howdy, everybody. Glenn the Geek back with you with Debbie from Equestrian Collections at equestriancollections.com. We're here with Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
I want to talk this week about the Enel No Bounce Bra. This is a sports bra, and this is the time of year that we need to start thinking about sports bras. It's finally beginning to be spring, and we're going to get out and ride. These bras absolutely will keep you from bouncing, and those of us who ride know how important that is. It's also good for running. It's good for really anything you want to do where you want to be comfortable and yet not bounce. They are a little different from your other types of sports bras. They fit like a vest. They come around and you attach them in front like a vest. They do feel a little tight when you first put them on, but as you wear them, they will relax and they will be much more comfortable. And I promise you, they work. They do size a little bit differently than most sports bras, so you would need to go to our site, www.equestriancollections.com, put in Enel, look at the bras, and then read really carefully the size chart, because you do measure yourself differently for this product than you do the other types of sports bras. But I'm telling you, it really works.
And I don't have much to offer to this one, Debbie, except that I know that Chris, your boss there at Equestrian Collections, said this is one of your best sellers of all the products you sell.
Yes, it is. It's our top seller, and we've had it for a long time, so people are real familiar with the fact that we have carried that. And by the way, this was a product that was featured on Oprah several years ago, so you know if it's featured on Oprah that they've done the research.
All right, go to EquestrianCollections.com and just search for Enel, E-N-E-L-L, and it'll bring this up, and you can check it out there. And as Debbie said, be aware of the size. EquestrianCollections.com. Hey, Jamie, can we talk for a second?
Okay.
That's the most embarrassing commercial I ever had to do. It's pretty much right up there. I've done hundreds and hundreds of commercials. That one, I just had nothing to say. What was I going to say? It was a commercial about bras. And she...
Uh-oh, are you there? Did I lose you?
I don't hear Glenn. Can you hear me, Jamie?
Yeah, I can hear you, Jen. Yeah, he was a little too embarrassed. We just went ahead and kicked him off the air.
He's out of here.
he's gone.
He's still
poor
talking away over there.
Is he really? Well, go ahead. Let's...
Over there.
Glenn, turn your mic on. It's okay. Hey, we've got our next guest on the line, and until Glenn figures it out, I would like to go ahead and introduce Tom.
Sorry, he's still talking. I'm sorry. I'll put myself on mute, and Jamie, we can welcome Tom to the air.
Why don't you go ahead and tap him on the shoulder?
I'm
going to
go do that.
Well, we've got Tom Spears on with us, and Tom is going to be at the Hoosier Horse Fair, and he's got a great product called DerbyFence.com. That's not the product name. That's the website name. So go ahead and check it out while we're talking about it. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Jamie. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. I'm so sorry that you had to follow a bra commercial and then we lost Glenn, but, you know, things happen.
It was an interesting commercial, and at the different horse fairs that I do, quite a few times I've been across from that booth, so it's a very interesting way to pass the time at the shows.
So have you tried the no-bounce bra?
No, but I've witnessed quite a few ladies walking in and out of their dressing room.
Oh, well, nice. That's the way to go at a horse fair. So tell us about the we'll move on, so I'll quit embarrassing you. Tell us about the Derby Fence.
Well, Derby Fence, it was designed for the equine as well as the agriculture market, and it's made out of high-density polyethylene, which is primarily the same material that your gallon milk jugs are made out of and your red gas containers. And even at 60 degrees below zero, you can beat it with a sledgehammer, and it's not going to break, shatter, crack. Where PVC, when it gets cold, it becomes brittle. It's basically not a safe product for horses.
Well, it's absolutely beautiful, and I'm looking at it, and it's kind of like it looks like your standard Kentucky four-board fence, you know, that you see on the beautiful horse farms. So, Glenn, are you back yet?
Pardon? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Glenn was back yet. So, the fence, it's not PVC. It's the kind of material that you would find in a, you said the gas. So, how did you invent this fence? How did you come up with it?
We are a custom extruder out of the Chicago, Illinois area, and we were making a product for the barricade industry for one of our large customers. And after making the product and seeing it in the field and watching trucks run it over, we realized it was a very strong and safe product. And every custom extruder's dream is to have a proprietary product line. And Derby Fence is basically the only product we actually manufacture and market ourselves.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Hello,
hey.
Glenn.
Hey.
Hey. Well, we're in the middle of these wicked storms here, and I got knocked off the air, so I hope that doesn't happen again. But good morning, Tom. Sorry I didn't get you at the very beginning there.
Not a problem, Glenn.
Hey, so now we were talking the other day about this fence, and one of the things we talked about was the fact that some of the PVC fencing that you see out there, and it's beautiful to look at. You'll see the white PVC fencing, and it all looks perfect. And, unlike the wood, it never looks old. You know, it never looks like it needs a paint job. But yet it does fade, and in some of the hotter climates, like where Jamie is, the PVC has a problem with the ultraviolet rays and stuff, right?
It is affected more than the high-density polyethylene. We actually add UV inhibitors in the product during the processing of the product, so it's throughout the product. There are some PVC products in the market that it's actually a co-extruded product where it's manufactured with two extruders, which actually melts the plastics and processes it. And what they'll use is a more of a recycled grade, a lower-end grade on the inner side, and then on the very top layer, which would be the thinnest part of the material, that's where they put the virgin material and the UV inhibitors and everything. So it's not all the way through the product as it is with our type of product, the way we manufacture it.
One of the things I liked about yours, and this you don't see too often in this type of non-wood fencing, is that you offer a multitude of colors, and you usually get black and white.
you don't even get black. We offer 8 different colors, and with the PVC, you're basically going to see just the lighter colors. PVC stands for polyvinyl chloride, and it would be no different than you washing your dark-colored jeans and putting bleach in it or somebody spilling bleach in there. So the chloride is bleach.
Well, I love the redwood, by the way. Redwood is my favorite color of the ones you have. And, it would look great, actually, here in Kentucky, the redwood. So now, you do this fencing, and does it have to be put in professionally, or is this something you can do yourself?
It's definitely a project you can do yourself. If you follow the directions, it's basically you're drilling a hole. It's very important to put the post 8 foot on center. If you come across a section where
and
you're
you know you make hold on 1 second, you make that
sure.
sound so easy. It's very important that you put the post 8 foot on center, because you know what? It's pretty easy to take the tape measure and measure 8 foot. But when you're drilling that darn hole and you hit rock or you hit shale like we used to in Pennsylvania, it was absolutely awful. And then you stick the post in. It's never in the center.
What you want to do in that instance is either go less than 8 foot on center. What we actually suggest is you drill a larger, wider hole so you can move it back and forth. If you come into like a big tree root that you can't get through or a big rock, shale, you can move it over a little bit. But you don't want to go over the 8 foot on center. You want to go either less or 8 foot on center.
Because your rails are going to be, are your rails 8 foot or 16 foot? Are they?
We 8 foot and 16 foot.
Okay. Or as Jennifer just said, hire a professional.
Or hire a professional. It's not that hard to put in, but the professionals, they're used to working with the type of material. They have the equipment to dig the holes. Once the holes are done, the rest of it's pretty simple.
Yeah, that's the thing is, they know how to do it, and having the right equipment when you're doing a project like this. We put up many, many, many miles of fencing, and boy, when we lived in Pennsylvania, when you'd hit that shale, I swear that we had to get out the digging iron, and we had to do it by hand for most of those holes, and we would put up four posts a day some days. It was that thick of shale, and you were just exhausted, and it was like, oh, okay, we need just to hire professionals to come in here with a big machine.
Yeah, that is very true. A professional, they'll usually do between 700 and 1,000 feet a day.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize they went that fast.
Right.
Now, the one thing, too, I liked about your fencing is that you have the choice of 2, 3, and 4 rail.
We have 2, 3, and 4 rail is basically what we offer. However, being the manufacturer, we can customize it to... We've had some people that requested 5 rail, especially in a stallion situation where it's going to be a stallion station. Right, and I actually have done a quote recently for a small dressage arena using very short post with just 1 rail.
Oh, that makes sense. So what's the oddest thing that you've seen?
Being around horses for such a long time, the fencing part, definitely nothing comes across that's very odd.
Okay, all right. So people haven't done weird stuff. What's the weirdest thing your fence has fenced in? Any weird animals?
Not really. No.
You're not fencing
not
in tigers or lions or anything. Okay, just checking. It's my job to ask the weird questions. So you're going to be at the Hoosier Horse Fair, which is coming up in April. It's the weekend of April. I'm taking a look here. The 13th, 14th, and 15th.
Correct.
We want to get a plug in for them because they've been kind enough to help us out here a little bit. So now that is in your territory. So you're are all fencing companies regional, or could somebody from California call you and get fencing?
No, as a matter of fact, California is a good market for us. Texas, we've actually have product in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. We've done quotes for Italy. Being the manufacturer, we're really not limited. We do have dealers throughout the country, and we're pretty flexible. You call an order in, we're going to ship it.
Now, with the price of wood going up so much, I mean, boy, anybody that goes to the grocery store that buys paper products from toilet paper to paper towels knows that the price of that has almost doubled in the last 4 years, and that's a derivative again of wood. And the price of wood is just going up like crazy. How does the price of the high-density fencing compare to wood?
We're probably about twice the cost of wood. We are the high-density polyethylene is a petroleum-based product. So as the price of gas, that the pricing becomes very volatile as well. We should do our best to hold the pricing for as long time as long as possible, because when contractors are quoting jobs, they're not actually getting the job that same day and placing the order. So we do the best we can and, you know, improve our efficiencies and try to hold the prices the best you can with the gas pricing the way it is now. It's been pretty volatile for the last, I'd say, the last year.
Yeah, but now yours is going to last a whole lot longer, right? It won't rot out and...
Definitely. If you're going to compare the initial cost of wood, we're definitely more expensive. But if you take it and break it down over a 10-year period, once you pay for Derby fence, you're not spending any more money. If you have a horse, you know, when you have wood, some horses think they're beavers and they're chewing the rails, and you're replacing rails. You have to paint it. Nowadays, since the EPA got involved with the chemical treatment of the actual lumber, the posts aren't even lasting 10, 15 years any longer.
Oh, they're lasting 4 or 5.
That's exactly right. I'm trying to be very nice.
I don't have to be. They're lasting 4 or 5.
I'm trying to be politically correct, actually. There we go.
Yeah, well, this is great. It's derbyfence.com, derbyfence.com, and you can find all the details about their various fencing. And I'm telling you, it's beautiful, and also I just love the color choices. You got brown, you got cedar, you got gray, hunter green. You have sort of have a rose color. I just love it. I love that kind of color choices.
Well, I appreciate the time.
No problem. They can find you at the Hoosier Horse Fair. You're going to be set up there. Do you have a booth number yet? Do you know?
At the Hoosier Horse Fair, I'm actually in booth 123 in the West Pavilion.
All right. Or you can find him at derbyfence.com. Thank you so much for coming on, Tom.
Thank you very much, Glenn and Jamie. It's been a pleasure.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, wood doesn't actually last in Arizona at all. Nobody has wood fencing at all because in the summer here, it just, I mean, it disappears. It warps
just evaporates.
It disappears.
Well, I guess so, because there's no moisture to keep it from just turning to dust, basically.
It pretty much does. So, we have this, like, wooden box thing that Chad built to cover our sprinkler system because the dogs kept chewing the wires. And, that lasted like 3 months before you could just almost kick it, you know, and get a hole in it.
Are all the houses built of concrete block?
Stucco. Lots of stucco. Yeah.
Okay.
And, or like slab block or, I don't know. There's pretty much no brick. Everything is stucco. I don't know why. It just is.
All right. Well, thank you to Tom for talking to us a little bit about fencing. Fencing's one of those projects that you don't have to do very often, but when you do, it's a pain in the butt. You know, and anything you can do to make it simpler is appreciated. I can't tell you how many of those holes we dug in Pennsylvania by hand without even a post hole digger, you know, a motorized one. We just used the old hand one.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
Yeah,
that's a nightmare. I do have a fun, before we get to the song, I've got a fun fencing story for you.
Okay.
And it just seemed appropriate because it happened this past weekend. Actually, it happened on Monday. But I was so caught up with other stuff that I didn't tell you about it because I feel really stupid. we have... Our fence, like if you're coming down our driveway, our house is at the very back, and that's where the gate is to get into the front of the house. The gate's at the very back, and the pastures and the arena are out front. Well, when we irrigate, we have to flood pretty much all of our fields all the way up to the arena. But there was no fence to, like, walk up the driveway and go from the driveway into the arena, so you would have to walk through the water to get into the arena. Well, that became a little annoying. So I wanted a gate just from the one section that we have here, just take that section and make it a gate. Didn't think that would be that challenging. And we had a guy come out. He's a welder, and he gives us a quote, like $100, touch your gate. I thought, well, that's perfect. So he comes out and starts working on it. And as he's working on it, he says to me, he goes, are your dogs put away? And I said, well, I guess, you know, he's got another, like, dog. So, yeah, sure. I'll put him away. No problem. So I put the dogs in the house, and I'm out working in the barn, and we got the vet out here with floating some teeth, and, you know, no big deal. And stop it. Go away. Sorry, my dog is, like, attacking me right now. Stop. Zenyatta is like, you're talking about me. I heard you talking about me. Okay. So part of the stupid thing was he says to me, are the dogs put away? Now I know why. Jump on you. So no problem. I'm back there. I'm thinking, okay, the dogs are up. We're good. And what I didn't realize is that he was going to take that section of the fence and leave. So he left. He took a section of my fence and left. Well, unbeknownst to me, because I'm in the back, I'm, you know, helping the vet float some teeth, I'm holding the horse and everything like that. And one of my students, who's like 8 years old, comes running down. She's like, Miss Jamie. I said, yeah. And she goes, look. And she points behind her, and Jet is galloping down the road, down the pavement of the road, carrying on. I couldn't believe it. So apparently Mr. Fence Guy just decided to take a section of the fence and leave and ask, are the dogs up? Well, he didn't ask about the stupid horses. So, yeah. That was fun. Fortunately, Jet is incredibly food motivated, and I just grabbed a bucket, jumped the fence, and started shaking it, and he came galloping right over. I had a lead rope. I threw it over his head, and I was able to pull him back in. But apparently, he had not been out for just a couple minutes. He had already run down kind of the busy road and then made a left turn down the not-so-busy road. And when I finally got him caught, I noticed that there was like 20 cars that were pulled over.
Oh,
everybody was just Avoid the galloping horse.
You were that girl again, Jamie.
I was so that girl. And what was really great is that I had clients, the veterinarian. I had people and friends over. I had, like, this whole big – everybody who could be at my farm at that time was at my farm. And I looked like an idiot.
Did he just forget to put the gate up? Or did he just think it was – did he have to go to the bathroom? What?
He took it home to weld the gate pieces on it. That's what he did. Yeah. So he came back.
He didn't notice the horse wandering around the field?
Apparently not. No, because he, I don't know what he was thinking. My husband hired a welder and not a horse person. So, but the dogs were up. The dogs were not outside, okay?
He was obviously a dog person.
I guess so. So fortunately, nobody was hurt. Unfortunately, I was completely embarrassed in front of the vet. I'm sure they're like, that girl is such an idiot. And all my boarders were there. And thank God it was my horse who was galloping down the road. I never heard the end of it. But it was Jet, of course, who's like, oh, I'm out of here. See ya. So, good time.
You're lucky you didn't end up in the middle of the desert someplace.
I'm lucky you didn't get hit by a car.
I know. You're very, very lucky, actually. Well, I'll tell you what, Jamie, you do provide a lot of entertainment for our show. I'm glad you have all these problems every week.
You know what's bizarre, really bizarre, is my next-door neighbor brought her children over for lessons yesterday for the first time, and I actually caught Jet in her front yard. And I thought, why on earth would you think that I would be qualified to take care of your children when my horse is galloping around loose in your yard? But whatever.
All right, a little Settle Down Cinderella by Patty Hall. We're going to be back to talk with thehorse.com with the weekly health report. Looks like we have Dr. Jones with us again today.
Friday night and the phone won't ring. You let it get you so blue. Climbing the walls of your pink bedroom. Feels like the world's leaving you behind. But girl, I got good news. There's a storybook ending. It's waiting for you. Settle down, Cinderella. Keep it together. You're
And that is Settle Down Cinderella. That's Patty Hall. You can find her at pattyhall.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, and we are brought to you today by Equestrian Collections. We talked a little bit about the No Bounce Bra and Feed XL. So thank you guys very much. Glenn, he was cut off when he was talking about how embarrassed he was. Just let me handle those, because I'm like, you know, my girls aren't big, but everybody's girls bounce when they ride, so that's a pretty good deal. And I'm not embarrassed to talk about stuff like that.
And she kind of caught me off guard, too. We were recording the commercials. She kind of caught me off guard with that one, and it was one of the most embarrassing moments I've had doing commercials.
Well, I'm proud of you. Good job.
I did it. I got through it. Hey, guess what? It's over 600 tips now on Horse Tip Daily. Jennifer has gone over the 600 episode mark over on Horse Tip Daily. And if you have never checked out Horse Tip Daily, hop on over there. You can always go back and listen to the past tips. It's a little show, 10 to 15 minutes every day, talking about different tips from anything from horse photography to horse training to health. We take all of the horse.com segments here on Wednesdays, and we put them all over on Horse Tip Daily. And the reason we do that is it makes it easier. Like if you remember on the morning show, you're listening on a Wednesday and there was something they talked about that you want to learn more about, or you have to deal with the issue now and you want to go back and find the episode, it's easier actually to go over to Horse Tip Daily, and you can search by subject matter and it'll bring up all the tips that were done by that particular subject. So it's actually easier to go over there to listen to the tips and the segments after we do them here. So you can find new segments over there. We take off of all the shows, and also Jennifer does new tips over there as well. So that's over 600 tips. Congratulations, Jennifer. It's horsetipsdaily.com. And I think it's time for this.
It's time for the weekly health report from horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And this is the time of week where we do get to talk to thehorse.com, and for some reason it always parallels kind of what is going on in my life. Well, not all the time, but sometimes it parallels what is going on in my life. And I just was talking to somebody about this particular problem the other day, and I am so excited to be able to learn more about it. So first of all, hello, Michelle. Good morning.
Hi, Jamie. Hi. So yeah, this stuff parallels my life too. You'll find that out as we go along. So any of these topics that come up might have something to do with my own horses.
Oh, see, we just need to talk. We need to talk more often because I should just call you and be like, are you going through this? Because I am. Now, we talked last month about breeding. Are you currently breeding any bulls, mares, anything like that?
That, unfortunately, no. I don't have any mares right now, and I haven't bred a horse in about 9 years. I can't believe my baby boy is actually nine this year, so I haven't bred one in a long time, but it's nice to think about. I like those baby horses.
Yeah, I like the babies, but the whole breeding aspect of it is pretty tough. Now, we're going to get to our topic here in a second because we're trying to get a hold of Dr. Jones, and we're going to talk today about navicular, mm-hmm. and kind of all the horses associated with navicular, what it is, you know, how do you diagnose it? We're going to get to all of that in just a minute when we get Dr. Jones. So tell us, but while we're stalling, what else is going on thehorse.com?
Well, I told you guys last week about that toxicology horse course that we put up. We also have an Ask the Vet Live coming up in March. We'll be promoting that in the next couple of days. It'll be on March 15th, and it's going to be on after colic, caring for your horse that has colicked already, how to kind of prevent that in the future, because it gets kind of scary. Once you've had one colic, you don't want it to happen again. And then we also have a webinar coming up the end of the month that's going to be on identification of horses. So we have a couple cool live events coming up that we're working on. I'm also heading out to do some videos next week. We're going to have a whole new set of videos coming up in the next 6 months or so on thehorse.com. So we're working hard behind the scenes to bring people really great information for their horses.
Well, I wanted to also comment on an article that just went up yesterday, I believe, this morning, about rabies. I had read this a couple places. Rabies confirmed in two Middle Tennessee horses. You know, this is just a reminder to everybody to get those rabies shots, because apparently these horses died and, you know, they discovered rabies. So just get the shots. Just say it.
Yeah, and I don't know that that's one that's on our list all the time. I personally do it with my own horses under my vet's advisement, because we do have different little critters in my area that could carry rabies. So, yeah, some safe insurance there. Talk to your vet and find out if he or she recommends that for your horse, for sure.
We had went out to the barn one morning, Jamie, and in the one stall right inside the barn, there was a raccoon up right above the horse's head in the just clawing along the walls of the stall. And, you know, I got the gun out and I shot the raccoon, because it was just odd behavior for him to be in that close to the horses. And sure enough, we had to bring him to state, and he was rabid. So we ended up having to quarantine a couple of the horses for a long time. It was a long time.
Oh, my gosh. That's just awful. I had no idea.
Yeah, they'll come out. If we brought in the raccoon and we said it was in our barn, they actually came out to the farm the next day, and they ask you 1,000 questions. Did you touch it? Did anybody touch it? Was it near any of the horses? And those horses that it was near, we had to quarantine them to a separate building, and you had to wear gloves when you're feeding them. You had to take the gloves off. You had to wash everything. And that went on for, 3 months or something? It was a long time.
Wow. Rabies is one of those things that when it comes around the time to do the vaccines, even if you don't, we don't have raccoons, we don't have those problems. What we do have is coyotes, but coyotes aren't going to really, unless they're probably rabid, they're really not around inside your barn, inside your properties, and they're not usually aggressive towards horses. So you think, well, why do I need to do vaccines for rabies? Well, first of all, it's $20 and it prevents death, okay? So that's, to me, $20 to prevent death. But what we do have here and what people forget about is bats. You just don't know.
Right.
Yeah, and I think when you're thinking about spending that extra $20 on the rabies vaccine, you consider also that it's not just your horse that you're protecting. You're also protecting the people around your horse, too. You're right. It's not very much money for a whole lot of peace of mind rabies isn't super common in horses, but it does show up. So.
It does show up. So, like you said, around the horses that could potentially have it, like Glenn said, he had to work on the whole barn for months trying to keep
everything
separate.
That is something else, Glenn.
Yeah,
I don't know
if
I can
really
bring
is.
Myself to shoot a raccoon.
Oh,
yeah,
you don't
seriously,
have a...
what's up?
Well, what are you going to do? I mean, the raccoon's in your horse's stall and won't leave, and you know that's not normal behavior. So.
No, it's not. So.
By the way, it took 7 shots to kill it.
Well, it's just a bad shot then.
I know, yeah. Maybe that's not a raccoon problem. Maybe that's a Glenn problem.
Yeah, that's a Glenn problem right there. Come on, Billy the Kid.
It was a 22. It wasn't a shotgun.
Whatever, Billy the Kid needs to get out there and start shooting some cans and start to learn a little bit. All right, well, we've got Dr. Jones on the line here. Dr. Jones, we were stalling and we got into a big rabies talk and we just realized that Glenn is a really bad shot. So,
I heard it all. I'm going to make sure I don't hire him when I need to get rid of some coyotes or something around here.
Yeah, no kidding. Please, gun for hire. I'll pay you.
Yeah. Oh, well, hey, Dr. Jones. So we're going to talk about navicular this morning. And that it came up because we are running this Western Performance article in the March issue, the print issue of the horse. So if you get that print issue, you can see that, or you can go to thehorse.com and get a digital subscription to see that article on Western Performance. But, you know, with these Western horses, navicular comes up. It seems like it comes up all the time. So Dr. Jones and I started talking about that. Why is it Western horses that are so commonly associated with navicular disease? And is it just the Western horses, or does everyone else deal with it too?
Well, Michelle, if I can just jump in before we get to it, you know, it just came up in my life as well because I'm in the market for a lesson horse. And, we've got this great quarter horse, totally dead broke, super sweet, but it has had some trouble with navicular in the past. And so I'm still, like, kind of in consideration, like, for this horse. I mean, I haven't gone and seen it yet, but that just made me think, what is navicular? Can it be treated? Is it something that is manageable? And it's so perfect you guys are talking about it today. So I'm really excited. It touches even English people, you know, so I'm curious to see what you guys think.
Well, Jamie, thank you for saying that, because it does touch English people, and it's not English people in courses. We've seen this syndrome an issue in warm bloods. So it's not just strictly a quarter horse disease, but there's plenty of quarter horses out there, and the numbers just seem to be a little bit higher statistically to see it more commonly in that breed. The other thing, too, is we've bred all these different breeds, warm bloods, Arabs, quarter horses, for things that we like. Not necessarily for functional things, but things we like. And the biggest pointed problem you hear about navicular syndrome is you got these big, beautiful quarter horses shown in halter with these little tiny feet. And that has been the biggest complaint. You got a big, heavy horse on a very small foundation. And I'll have to say that, yeah, that is true. We do see the smaller hooves or hoof to be a problem hoof. And what necessarily is a problem in there, you don't know until you start, you know, evaluating it and looking into it, but a lot of times it's the heel area. Why the heel area? It takes the biggest blow of the leg. It takes all the flexion, takes all the pounding, especially in the forelimbs. So just structurally, if you think about it, it makes sense. And why do we see it as a Western problem? Because the population of quarter horses is a lot larger, and also they've bred for tiny feet, big bodies a long time ago. We're starting to get away from that. You don't see that as much anymore. There's a few that still do it, but in general, their hoof has been not bred into, bred out, because we're looking for other things for the shows.
So when people say navicular disease, what is it that they're talking about?
Well, it's kind of a catch-all phrase anymore. You're starting to hear some farriers or veterinarians who are farriers calling it heel pain or cuddle heel syndrome. Those are some other words that are being thrown out there, and some of the sports medicine veterinarians. And the reason they're saying that is we found that besides the bone and the bursa, navicular bone and bursa, that sits in the heel area of the horse's hoof wall, pastern area, there's a bunch of ligaments and tendons that can also have issues as well. So the heel syndrome or caudal heel syndrome or heel disease is a better definition or diagnosis than navicular, because when you say navicular, people immediately think it's the bone or the bursa. If you just say it's a heel syndrome horse, we know that there's some structural imperfection or disease going on in that heel area.
So it doesn't mean specifically that it's just that little bone in there causing problems in the hoof.
If I'm talking to vets, I'll ask them, do we know it's definitely the navicular bone? Do we know it's definitely the navicular bursa? And then they can say, yes, we did an MRI. We saw bone edema. We saw navicular bursitis. We saw adhesions in the bursa, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and nothing wrong with the soft tissue. Then you know it's the bone problem or it's the bursa problem.
So what are the symptoms that show up in a horse that's suffering from navicular pain or that caudal heel pain?
Jamie, do you know it?
Okay, say ask that question again.
Do you know the symptoms that you see in a horse that's suffering from navicular or caudal heel pain?
I would say they kind of walk on their toes. I don't know.
Well, that's one subject, is they'll point the toe. The affected foot will be pointed out in front of them because that foot hurts to sit underneath them and put a lot of pressure on the heel. So they at least by pointing the foot. They also will have intermittent lameness. That's very, very common for us veterinarians to hear when the client says, you know, they were off for a couple weeks and they were sound for a few weeks and they're off for a day or two and then they're sound. I think it's the right, but sometimes I think it's the left. You know, it switches from side to side sometimes. Those are common clinical signs and history that we get. You can see it worse on the circle. Their head bobs, you know, as the lamest leg is on the inside circle at a trot. Those kind of things is what you hear about.
So is it usually bilateral? Is it usually in both front legs then?
Sometimes it is, because remember, the front feet take the bulk of the weight of the horse. So whatever athletic ability you're doing with the horse, whether it's reining or jumping, it's still going to put a lot of weight on that front end. Even though the reiners have slides and they spin on the back end, they're still taking a lot of concussion on those front feet. So it's usually seen in both front feet. But it can be one foot only. But usually, in my experience, there's always something else going on in the other front foot.
So
it's been compensating.
If you have a client who's saying, you know, my horse seems like it's sometimes lame, sometimes not, and you're starting to think maybe it has to do with navicular, how are you going to diagnose the disease or the caudal heel pain?
For the veterinarian experience that the client's going to have, the veterinarian starts off with the history and then starts off with an exam of hoof testing the foot, feeling the leg, making sure there's no other abnormalities on the limb, and looking at the foot, the shape of the foot. Is it upright? Is it got low heels, long toes, underrun heels, long toes? Is it uneven from side to side? That kind of thing. So they do a good evaluation of what the foot actually looks like. Is one smaller than the other? Now that I'm saying this, I'd love to have all the listeners and you, Jamie and Glenn, go out and check out your horse's feet and notice, is there a foot that's smaller than the other foot in your front feet? Because there usually is one that might be a little bit smaller or very distinctly smaller.
I'm raising my hand on this one.
Me too.
Yeah, they're not perfectly matched. but you'd be surprised. When you take your horse out on concrete and you take a really good look at it, you're like, oh, I never noticed that. Or you'll notice that one has a lower heel than the other, and that's the difference you see. But anyway, so that's the exam of trotting them back and forth. Hard, hard, hard surface is best. Putting them at a trot, so they just trot in hand. Whether it's on a lunge line or in hand, trot. Flexing the lower limb, the fetlock, the pastern, the coffin, and trotting them off. Some have done a wedge evaluation where they put the toe up on the board and they or a wedge and they overstress the flexor area and trot them off. So the exam can extend from, you know, very quick trot and you got a head bob with a couple steps to a real involved, you know, circling and wedging and all that. and watching them trot. And then the next step is they start to block out the pain. So as we're all taught in school, you start at the bottom and work up the leg because 80% of the problem is in the horse's foot. And we start with a heel block called a PD block. And you block both nerves that goes to the heel and the sole. And then you trot the horse again after the block is kicked in. It's usually about 10 minutes. And see if that horse felt much better and starts to look good. And a lot of times they do. And then it switches to the other leg. And then the other leg starts to hop. And they're like, oh, I didn't know it was both front feet. I thought it was just the right front or it was just the left front. So then that one, they're head bobbing. You do the circles and you flex it again, then you know, the whole nine yards. And then you do a PD block on that. And all of a sudden you've got this horse that's extending out its front feet, not doing little short, choppy trotting steps, and really looks comfortable and happy.
And so once you get to that point, are there other diagnostics that you use, like the x-rays and the MRI?
Of course. That's, you know, I mean, all veterinarians are carrying x-rays and ultrasounds in the truck, so they're going to pull the x-ray out. They're going to take an x-ray of the foot, preferably without the shoes on, because it's hard to see the navicular bone or the wings of the navicular bone with shoes on, especially if they're in a full circular egg bar shoe. And you may see some distinct abnormalities in the bony complex of the navicular bone, and that will give you an immediate diagnosis that the bone is involved. There may be absolutely nothing wrong with bone. And the old phrase they taught us when I was in school years ago was, if you have the clinical signs and it blocks the heels, but you have no changes on the navicular bone in the x-ray, it's still navicular.
Yeah.
And they said that, you know, a lot of times you'll have some really, really painful horses and you won't see any changes in the bone. And those are navicular horses. And then you'll see some horses who sound, and you do a pre-purchase and you take an x-ray and you'll see something wrong in the navicular bone, but they're sound. So I haven't seen the latter very much, but I have seen the earlier one where they are very lame, but there's nothing wrong with the navicular bone. And since I was a part of a study a few years back looking at navicular syndrome and trying to treat it with a particular drug, the amount of horses I got to see was fantastic. The numbers were incredibly high, and these horses got free MRIs. And what an eye-opener for me I found MRI to be. It's an expensive procedure, I realize, but it gives the veterinarians and the horse owners so much more information about their horse's heel that they can make a proper diagnosis and find a proper treatment protocol. You don't have to submit your horse to the pasture if you get a heel syndrome issue. You need to find out exactly what that is. The horse is not done at 5, 6, 7 years of age because it has navicular, in quotations, navicular syndrome or heel syndrome, which would be more appropriate, because it may not be the bone. It may be soft tissue structure that just needs time to heal. It might need just some podiatry changes to help with the healing, things like that. So MRI is my new friend when it comes to heel syndrome. It's definitely not my horse owner client's new friend because of the expense, but it has helped me make a better diagnosis and give a better prognosis for what the horse can or cannot do.
And I'm going to interject here that on that study that Dr. Jones mentioned, one of my horses was submitted to that study and didn't get included in it, but did get the MRI, and the MRI made it very clear what was actually going on with him. And this is with his previous owner, who is a good friend of mine, and so I was aware of all of this when it was going on. I know his full history, but that MRI really, for me, when I purchased him, made me feel much more comfortable that his navicular or heel pain issues were something that I could manage and with my vet and my farrier. So that information just was really, really helpful.
Now, if I can jump in here too, because the MRI, Dr. Jones, you're right. This is going to revolutionize horse equine diagnostics. I think it's just to be able to do this now, you get it. However, just because a friend of mine just had to get an MRI on her horse, just so you know, at about the expense of $2,500, it is not covered by insurance.
Some MRI will cover. Some will cover. There are some insurance companies. Yes, that have covered it. I've had some split the difference. They cover half. I've been amazed. And I had a client tell me up front, I'm not doing MRI because they're not going to cover it. My insurance said they wouldn't cover it. Then they found there was a local hospital here in Florida, well, I don't know if they're still doing it, was trying to encourage people to do MRIs. So they dropped their price incredibly to the point that they weren't making money. They were probably just barely paying for the machine, but not making any money on it. And so I told her, I said, hey, they dropped the price. It's not $100, but it's still expensive, but it's a heck of a lot cheaper, about 75% of what the normal fee is. Do you want to do it? And she thought about it, and she said, sure, I'll do it. She went and had it done, submitted it to the insurance company, and they ended up paying for it. Even though they said up front they weren't going to pay for it. So
interesting.
I found that to be very interesting.
So I want to kind of bring this around back to these horses that have been diagnosed. Say you get to do the MRI or you diagnose it using other conventional methods. You'd mentioned it's not the end of a horse's career. What are the options for these horses? Is it okay for them to have a little bit of bute so that they can go on and maybe be a 4-H horse or a lesson horse like Jamie's looking at? Are there some options for horses?
Well, I think Jamie could probably chime in on this one and the fact that her friend did the MRI and she knew the information she got from it as well as you, Michelle, is let's just take, for example, there's three main structures you want to kind of think about in the back side of the heel. There's far more than that, but there's three or four of them that really come to mind to me. Navicular bone, navicular bursa, deep digital flexor tendon, and then the collateral ligaments that attach the coffin bone to the bone, the short pastern above it. These structures can be affected in severe ways, and to know which structure or if all of them or a little bit in one and a lot in the other are affected helps plan the treatment protocol, because you don't treat a soft tissue injury the same as a bone, and you don't treat a bone the same as soft tissue. So if you want to say, for example, your 4-H horse has heel syndrome, and they do an MRI. I know it's a 4-H horse, and you're thinking, gosh, it's not a lot, you know, it's a lot of money for just a horse that I'm just doing a 4-H on. And they find out that it has a very large tear in its deep digital flexor tendon. You really don't want to bute that horse and continue to ride it or jump it. You're just going to tear the tendon more. And so really having that information would make a good judgment call on what to do with your pony. Now let's say that little 4-H pony went in and just had some bone edema and navicular bursitis. Well, you can treat the bone edema now if you import the drug, and I've seen some great results on the drug that I have imported since 2003 called Tildren on some bone edema, making those bones feel much better, probably reorganizing the bone. I never get a client to go back and re-MRI, so I can't tell you if the bone definitely improved, but clinically the horse improved within a month to 2 months. And the bursitis, we either treated with bute or we injected the bursa, and the horse is back being shown and not having any detriment to string itself worse by being shown. So I hope those were two good examples for you to understand that the MRI really helps make a good judgment call on what to do with your 4-H pony or your big show jumper or even just your trail riding horse or your buddy that is it time to go to pasture or not.
Yeah.
Well, that navicular word used to be awfully scary. I remember people kind of whispering, you know, so-and-so's horse has been diagnosed with navicular, and it doesn't seem like that's the case anymore, that we do have some options.
Absolutely. Nope. And the number one thing that your veterinarian is going to prescribe is probably shoeing changes or shoeing aids, such as an egg bar shoe, maybe a wedge temporarily, and things like that will help the heel area of the horse's foot. Maybe spreading the heels so that you can get more of your bars because they're underrun and they're contracted. So you're probably going to jump to podiatry care right off the bat if you don't run out and get your MRI, but I would recommend getting your MRI and then go to your farrier, make your changes while they're getting the MRI results back to your vet, and then the vet can do whatever they need to do based off the MRI results.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Jones. And I want to point people to thehorse.com. I'm putting an article. It's number 17730. If you put that in the search bar on thehorse.com, you can read more about navicular disease. I'm also posting that up on Facebook, on the horse's Facebook page, if you're interested in reading more about it. We have lots of good information. There's lots of information, lots of things to learn about navicular disease. It's a big topic.
You're welcome. I hope this helped Jamie with her decision.
Yeah, kind of. So basically, I need to take this horse, who may be a potential lesson horse, take him to the hospital, get an MRI on him, and then make a decision.
Uh-oh. Well, you can start with the X-ray. You can start with the X-ray. If they see some drastic changes in the bone, you can probably say that that's your primary problem. There may also be soft tissue problems with that, but you might be able to get it, you know, answered. Granted, there are some ultrasounds you can do of the pastern and the upper part of the hoof wall. You just can't get underneath the coffin very well. You can ultrasound through the frog to see some of that area, but you just need a veterinarian who is very, very, very familiar with doing those ultrasounds. And they are out there. They've taken extended CEs that learn how to do those kind of ultrasounds. So I'd highly recommend that you ask what kind of continuing education they've had in their ultrasound abilities to make sure that they're good.
All right. Well, you guys, thank you so much. This has actually been incredibly informative and just, yeah, helpful. And I'm so glad to see that the diagnostics in the equine world are now caught up to the human world, it would seem, with MRIs. And so if you do get an MRI, there is somebody there who is qualified to read it. It's not some random that's like, well, it kind of looks like, you know, when they do X-rays. So there's qualified people at these hospitals. Is that correct?
Yes, and then some of them use an outside radiologist, board-certified radiologist, to read them. So it might take an extra day or two. My goodness, wait that extra day or two. You've waited this long to get your answer. Wait the extra day or two and get that official board-certified written answer that your veterinarian can read, and they can talk to that radiologist, and they can talk to the referring surgeon and say, what do you recommend for this? I see what's in there, but do you recommend stall rest, stem cell, Tildren, Bute, injections, that kind of thing?
All right, great. That just reminds me I need to go insure everything I have. All right, you guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Bye.
Have a great week,
Jamie.
And we'll talk to you guys again next week.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
FloridaEquine.com for Dr. Jones and thehorse.com for Michelle. And, man, I'm sorry. Sometimes I get more questions than answers when I'm listening to this segment.
Well, I think your $300 prospective school horse just went up to $5,000.
Yeah. I think I might have learned that. I might just keep looking.
I kind of figured that's where you were leaning after that conversation. Like, okay, I can find one that doesn't have navicular.
Yeah, you know, if it's my horse and I do have insurance and, you know, it's my horse and I really am concerned, but a stranger horse, we'll just keep looking. Sorry. It's horrible of me.
Yeah, but you know what? You don't need it. You just don't need to have one.
Yeah. Yeah, I really don't. I've got enough crap going on. I got horses galloping down roads. I mean, fencing that is missing. I've got enough going on. So, yeah, good times. Hey, before we go, Glenn, I want to let you know that on eventingnation.com, there is a person who posted a girl named Amy Weld, who is writing a series on how Rolex changed her life. It's called Rolex Changed My Life Part 1. And I've been looking through this periodically throughout the show, and I just noticed that this is a person who had never been into eventing at all and never really knew what Rolex was, and got invited by a bunch of her friends as like a girls' weekend to go to Rolex. Now, she goes on to talk about how she has now become completely obsessed with Rolex, and how she had listened to the Eventing radio show, and she met Glenn, and he even invited her to be on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
I'm trying to remember who this person is. I don't know.
She's obviously pretty because you always ask all the hot girls, come on over, sit down.
I'm going to have to check that out, see who that is.
All right. Yeah,
oh,
really
yes,
good.
Yes. Amy, I know her. Yes, I do. I think this might have been, did she say what year? Wasn't this last year or the year before she was there? And I think we did have her ever on the show, actually.
No, I think this is even longer than that. So anyway, just a really good read and part one, and I'm really excited to read part two. If you have never been to Rolex, read this because it'll sell you on it. You will be like, oh my God, I totally have to go to this horse event. If you have been to Rolex, read it because it just brings it all back. It's just really, really, really cool. So again, that's eventingnation.com. And our show's over now, Glenn. We're done.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow. Don't forget to get your really bad ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We need some more, so get looking at Craigslist today. And the prize is a gift pack from Dr. Rose's Remedies. That's it, Jamie. See you tomorrow.
All right. Don't forget, spay, neuter, and geld.